You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and today we're going to talk a little hot stove action from around the AL Central. Going to talk to Jason Beck, who covers the Tigers. Going to talk to Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox. Jordan Bastian, who covers the Indians. Brett Bollinger, who covers the Twins. And Dick Cagle, who covers the Royals. And find out all these teams' pressing needs and maybe even not so pressing needs and where they stand payroll-wise and going into free agency and the trade market and all those fun things that could be brewing here in the next few months. So hope you'll tune in, check it out, and we'll see you soon. Going into the winter with a Tigers team that's got a lot of interesting decisions to make, and we're going to bring in Jason Beck to talk about that. Beck, obviously a tough season for the Tigers, you know, on the whole, just from the standpoint they didn't get where they wanted to go. Kind of had some fits and starts during the year. Get into October, and the bullpen trouble really came back to bite them, so I'm sure that'll be an area of emphasis this winter. But on top of that, a lot of difficult decisions to make with some core guys, some key guys. Max Scherzer, Victor Martinez, Torii Hunter, all entering free agency on top of some of the bullpen guys. Jabba Chamberlain, who had a nice year for them, Phil Koch, Jim Johnson, and Joel Hanrahan, two bounce-back guys they signed that didn't exactly pan out, but we'll see what the future holds for them. They did pick up the $7 million option on Joaquin Soria, their midseason trade pickup, but obviously still more work to do in that bullpen, and, you know, perhaps – you know, even more importantly, is work to do to address Scherzer's rotation spot and Victor's spot in the order and Hunter as well. You know, when you look at those, first of all, those three guys, those three key guys, Scherzer, Victor, and Hunter, it seems like the going line of thinking is you know, Scherzer's going to have a huge market available for his services. It seems like the Tigers' primary emphasis will be Victor and perhaps letting those other two guys walk. What's your gut feeling on those three?
I think Martinez is far and away the biggest priority for them, you know, in part because it's so hard to find quality bats on the market. And also, I think just, you know, the type of season he had and, you know, not just what he meant in batting order, but what he means in the clubhouse. He, in a lot of ways, he's the heart of that team. You know, I know Cabrera is, you know, a two-time MVP, and, you know, obviously he means, you know, the world to these guys. But I think in terms of clubhouse presence, you know, Victor Martinez means so much to that squad that, you know, it's hard to envision that clubhouse without him, even though, granted, they did have to go without him in 2012 when he had the knee injury. It's going to be tricky see how they maneuver that, though, because if Victor really is looking for 4 years, the Tigers are going to have to have a decision to make, because when you look at the injuries that Cabrera's compiled, you know, and we're talking now about back-to-back off seasons, you know, with surgery involved, the longer you go with Martinez, the longer that DH slot is taken up, and the longer you know, you have to look at Cabrera as a first baseman. And, you know, I think when you're talking about 4 years, that not only goes through, you know, Martinez's age 39 season, you know, then you're talking about Cabrera going into his mid, you know, entering his mid-30s as a first baseman. And you kind of have to project, you know, how well he's going to have to play the position and how much wear and tear he's going to pile up and what kind of impact that's going to have on him overall. Yeah, and I know, you know, Cabrera is still a guy who sees himself as a third baseman. You know, he still thinks he can play after this, and he can on occasion. But at some point, you know, and I'm sure they went over this when they signed Cabrera to the mega extension in spring training, you know, you have to project how long you can count on Cabrera as an everyday first baseman. And I think that has to play in part into your planning on Victor Martinez.
It's a tough time, really, to because you're right. His value to that clubhouse is off the charts. You know, he has, I'll talk about Victor here, he has skills that will probably age gracefully. I don't think he'll have another season quite like he had this past year. That was an unbelievable season for a guy in his mid-30s. But I guess the difficult thing is just when you look at this market, I mean, he's clearly the top of the heap guy from a DH perspective, but it's probably the one area of depth from a position player standpoint at a time when so many teams are looking around for offense. You know, the DH role is one. The top has changed a lot in the game, and it's the one area that's really saturated right now in free agency. Guys like Mike Morris and Billy Butler, Kendry Morales, you know, these are more the lower, more value plays, I guess, than a Victor Martinez is going to be a top-of-the-market guy. So, you know, you almost wonder if that enters their mind at all, because they also have need in the outfield in some capacity, whether it be a full-time center fielder or, a corner guy. I don't know what their preference is there, but how do you see the outfield picture shaking out with Torrey, potentially out of the mix?
The Tigers haven't really clarified themselves on that. If they're looking to move Rajay Davis back into a corner spot and try to fit a full-time center fielder, then their most likely option is going to have to be the trade route. Really, the only free agent of any significance on the market who plays center field regularly is Colby Rasmus, and he's coming off of really back-to-back kind of subpar years. And I'm not sure he's the type of guy who's going to, I guess, grow gracefully into that center field spot, playing half his games at Comerica Park. Then again, if you're looking at Rajay Davis as a center fielder, can you count on him full-time, or do you want to mix him in with another guy, preferably a left-handed hitter, who can kind of not only take some of the workload off of him, but put Davis into a position where you're using him in more favorable situations as opposed to having him face right-handed hitters a bunch. It's an interesting conundrum. I mean, there's options out there if you're looking at right fielders instead of center fielders. There's certainly a lot of choices that way. If I had to guess, just knowing how difficult center fielder is to play at Comerica Park, and given that there's no real center fielder on the horizon right now, unless Devin Travis can make the jump as a prospect from second base to center once he comes back from core muscle surgery, the most logical way to handle it would seem to be a trade, to bring in the guy. And I know, you hear rumors about Peter Borges potentially being on the market. You look at the glut of young center fielders that the Red Sox have and wonder if a match can be found there. You look at maybe some smaller deals that these guys might be able to do, and then be able to try to fit something in there.
The Tigers, the problem they keep running into, with this team is they have six guys under contract for a little over $90 million next year. That doesn't include the arbitration for Price and Porcello. You had a blog post about this, but the rotation alone, that the four guys slotted in the rotation are going to make about $76 million bucks projected when you factor in arbitration. So I know one thing that's been batted around, outside the organization is the potential of trading David Price, flipping him after acquiring him this summer and maybe, adding some young bodies to help defray some of those costs and to have, a team that leans a little younger. But I don't know how realistic that is a year away from his free agency if they can get what they'd be looking for there. I don't know if that's even something they're entertaining, because at the end of the day, it's still a team built around a really strong rotation and Miguel Cabrera and maybe Victor Martinez in the middle of the order. But any thoughts on that route?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. It's going to pop up at some point. I don't know if how seriously the Tigers are going to pursue it. But remember, Dave Dombrowski's his modus operandi every year is that there are very, very, very few guys that he would ever consider untradeable, because a lot of it depends on what teams are offering you in return. So if they can fill multiple spots, not just for the short term but long term, by trading a guy like Price, I think they might consider it. I think they would at least look at it. Now, it would have to involve some sort of young starting pitcher, because, the difference between having to fill Scherzer's spot with, say, a Robbie Ray or a Kyle Lobson or something like that, and having to fill two spots that way, you know, is huge. And I think, you know, that would be a huge risk they'd be undertaking. But, you know, if you could get that, if you could solve, say, center field by doing that, you know, I think it would be something that Dave would at least look at. But, you know, it's tricky. You know, this is part of the trickiness that the Tigers encounter right now is that, you know, they're still a win-now team, but they're a team that's aging rapidly and also a team that's dealing with a payroll that's becoming, you know, tougher and tougher to handle while not having an abundance of young players that they can slot in right now. You know, Nick Castellanos was somebody who slotted in, you know, this year, and you know, we're able to kind of you know, get this team a little younger. Steven Moya, you hope, is on the horizon. You know, he's in the Arizona Fall League right now and has a pretty decent chance to play winter ball. James McCann is a guy who could get into the mix behind the plate. You know, but all in all, it's, you know, ironically, you know, the one thing that they don't really have is a surefire young starter. Whoever gets in there and replaces, you know, Scherzer, if he were to sign somewhere else, it's going to have to be a leap of faith on the Tigers' part.
And yeah, I'm just thinking about this, but you talk about dangling a price, or even if it was someone like a Porcello who's coming off a really strong season, yeah, I'm sure the recent history has to play in their minds there too. I mean, they traded Doug Fister a year ago, and remains, you judge all trades in the long frame and not the short term, but obviously in the short term, that was not a trade that helped them in 2014. They still have high hopes for Robbie Ray, but now you're talking about if you deal another starter, maybe going down that road again, who knows, but and then bullpen-wise, you know, they made the big play for Joe Nathan a year ago. That obviously didn't pan out particularly well. This year, they still need bullpen help, and there's some, you know, there'll be the quote-unquote big names on the market, a guy like Andrew Miller, a guy who they targeted in the summer and then, you know, came back to haunt them in the series against the Orioles. And then Luke Gregerson, Joe Thatcher, Pat Neshek, you know, these are guys kind of the top of the market heap and bullpen-wise. But I also wonder there if it's something where they might shy away from the you know, so-called bigger names and look for more value plays in that area as well.
Yeah, I think it's one. You know, Andrew Miller makes a ton of sense, but he makes sense for so many teams,
right,
that, you know, the market for him is just going to, you know, you anticipate it's going to balloon. And if a team wants to look at him as a closer type, I can't see the Tigers being able to counter that. You know, it's something where if you don't get him, though, you know, there's obviously a big drop-off to the next best, you know, lefties as far as free agents go. And but they're going to have to fill that spot somewhere because you can't count on Ian Kroll being able to fill that role until you see him start having some consistent success in the big leagues. They trusted him for a good part of the first half last year, and he seemed to wear down as the season went on, to the point where he was almost a non-factor by the midway point. But yet Phil Koch is a free agent, and you know, it's hard to see him coming back and taking a primary role. You know, it's Blaine Hardy isn't that type of guy you could see as a primary left-hander. They have to get somebody, and that's the biggest part of the bullpen I think they have to address. You know, they've got a closer in Nathan who's having a little bit more success near year's end. You know, you hope he's got together for spring training. He's learned some lessons. You've got Joaquin Soria who can slide in that closer role if Nathan falters. If not, you know, you can look at him that if he's back on his game, he should be one of the better eighth inning setup guys in the league. And then, you know, in the seventh inning, if you can get Bruce Rondon back, I think that makes a world of difference. You know, I know you're going to have to be careful with a kid like that coming off Tommy John surgery, but if you can get that 100-mile-an-hour fastball back, he's the type of dominant pitcher they badly lacked last year, and I think made a bigger difference than a lot of people realize. You know, when it came down to crunch time for these guys, those are the types of pitchers who he'll really win games for you late in the year and then into the postseason. Those guys who have dominant stuff and can put together to get key outs, you know, when you're going up against top hitters in clutch situations.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, they're going to need those upside plays from in-house for the bullpen. A lot of this is going to have to come from within. I mean, they're going to need Verlander to get, you know, back closer to what it used to be, a year removed from the core muscle procedure, and Miguel Cabrera coming back from that ankle injury that was, even, you know, he's playing through something that was even worse than they thought. I mean, at the end of the day, your stars have to be your stars, and the Tigers are certainly going to need some complementary pieces around them, but you know, still a team built around those stars. So it's going to be an interesting winter. Very interesting team here. The Victor Martinez thing is subject number one with the Tigers. They've been linked like so many other teams to Yasmani Tomas, the Cuban outfielder. But you know, that's a huge investment for a 24-year-old Cuban import. So you know, a lot of ways for the Tigers to go here. I'll be curious to see if they do end up dangling either of those starters. Mentioned Price and Porcello would strike me as two of the more obvious candidates, but ultimately expect them to keep those guys and to hope this rotation can ride them back to October. So I want to thank Jason Beck for joining us, joined by Dick Cagle, and it's going to be the shortest offseason in a long time for the Kansas City Royals, and that's a beautiful thing. Made it to Game 7 of the World Series. Came up short in that game, but what a wonderful run it was leading up to that. And now the Royals have some big decisions to make as they try to get back to that level and win that last game of the World Series next time around. So let's bring in DK to talk about it. DK, obviously the number one most pressing issue with this club going into the winter is James Shields, the rotation ace and the guy who's meant so much for them just from innings and attitude and of course performance. They extended the qualifying offer to him. It seems like the prevailing sentiment is that he could command a lot more than the Royals are willing to go. Having said that, we've seen how those qualifying offers do impact people's markets from what they're expected to be, and we also know that there's a couple other big arms out there in free agency. So what's your feeling about the Shields situation as we go into the winter?
Well, we just had a discussion with Dayton Moore today, and although James Shields, oddly enough, his name didn't come up directly, Dayton did discuss how difficult it would be for the Royals in their market to sign one of the very top echelon pitchers in the free agent market.
Yeah.
Of course, that would involve Shields. And I think what they're really going to do is kind of lower their aim, not discounting, obviously, how important Shields was to their effort in the last 2 years. But I think he's just going to be out of their range, and I think what they're going to do is concentrate more on a pitcher somewhat on the level of a Jason Vargas, the guy they signed a year ago about this time, a guy that is a good, steady performer and can come in and supplement the four very good starting pitchers they already have. So I think that's where they're going to go as far as their starting pitchers. Not a starting pitcher is their number one priority, to get a good starting pitcher in there to add to this rotation. But I don't think it's going to be James Shields or anyone else in that upper echelon category. I think it's going to be a lower tier kind of pitcher who nevertheless is a good, strong, solid, proven major league pitcher.
Well, we know Ned Yost is neighbors and hunting buddies with John Lester, but I don't suppose that relationship extends into a free agent discount by any stretch of the imagination.
They may do some hunting and field clearing or something together out there, but I don't think it's going to go down to dollars and cents. Yeah, there's no doubt that Ned thinks highly of John Lester and probably vice versa, but still, you know, it boils down to probably more than anything years of contract.
How many years
they're willing to go at a high rate of pay. So I don't think it's going to work for the Royals. They're they're certainly not closing the door, but it's unlikely.
There's certainly some more bargain type options out there. A guy like Brandon McCarthy or a guy like Jason Hamill. On the Twins podcast with Rhett Bollinger, we talked about they're in a sort of similar situation to the Royals, looking for a dependable innings-eating starter without breaking the bank, and those are two guys who came up then and could come up for the Royals as well. Anytime a team makes a deep run like that, there's an infusion of in attendance and some revenue generated out of that, but the Royals also have a lot of arbitration cases to handle. Don't see their payroll jumping drastically from the low 90s point where it was in 2014. So the usual creativity will have to come into play here, and we've seen from Dayton Moore's ability to build this 2014 club, he certainly has the ability to do that again. There are two other prominent free agents, Billy Butler and Nori Aoki. They turned down that option on Butler that would have given him a substantial pay raise. I think it was like a 50 or 60% pay raise from what he made in 2014. That made all the sense in the world, but remains to be seen. Maybe they'll work out more of a discount deal with him. It seems like both sides have interest in maintaining that relationship on some level, but that one's going to come down to dollars and cents too.
Both sides have said they'd like to work something out, but still, as Billy told us the other day, some other club might come in with a sensible offer that appeals to him, and off he goes. And we're not even ruling out National League clubs in this scenario, because even though Billy is not an Eric Hosmer at first base, when he filled in for Eric that month in August, he did very well at first base.
Right.
A good, solid first baseman who works hard at it. And that showed in that 1 month. I mean, my gosh, he hadn't played first base for forever, and he came off the bench and did very well for a month. So I think he proved in that way that he could survive in the National League playing first base. And he hit much, much better when he was out there in the field that month, too. So.
Mm.
That's something to consider as well. Now, as far as Aoki goes, I don't know what's going to happen there. He was certainly a bargain last year. I don't remember exactly what his salary was. I think it was like $1.9 million or something when he came over from the Brewers. But he's an interesting player, and as Dayton was saying just today, both those guys, Butler and Aoki, they're what they call real professional hitters. They know how to battle a good pitcher. They know how to go deep in counts. They put the bat on the ball. So they're good. Certainly good options to come back next year. But it's all in the negotiations and how things work out and so on and so forth. We can't predict at this point whether either one of them will be back or not.
Yeah, we saw the benefit of the James Shields, I think now we can even call it the Wade Davis trade with the season he had. Saw the benefit of that in 2014 and the run they made, and now here's the downside is, right field, here's a hole where Will Myers might have been standing otherwise, and the rotation spot, obviously the innings you have to fill with Shields hitting free agency. As far as that right field goes, I mean, Jerrod Dyson, was big for them on the postseason stage, but ultimately, I don't think he's a guy you want to trust against left-handed pitching, given his numbers there in that scenario. But maybe they find a platoon option for him.
Well, that could be too. I don't know. I'm a believer that Jerrod Dyson could be an everyday player.
Okay.
It's left-handed or not, but that remains to be seen. I think he certainly. Has a big impact on the lineup. Obviously, he can steal bases and play some great center field. So I think they could survive very nicely with Jerrod Dyson in center field and moving Kane to right. But as we say, we'll see how that works out. You don't know.
And it got lost in the shuffle of the World Series, but they made the waiver claim for Moises Sierra, who maybe he's an option for them in the outfield next season as well. And there's guys who in the trade market and free agent market isn't quite as robust, but there could be some guys in the trade market. And thinking back to Butler, you made a good point. If he can market himself as a position player, that helps him exponentially because it's a pretty depressed DH market this winter. There's kind of a lot of options there. Guys like Mike Morse, Kendry Morales, obviously Victor Martinez is the number one guy in that market, but you almost wonder if that puts the Royals in a good position to get a good deal on Butler or maybe one of those other guys in the lower tier. But kind of shifting things a little bit, DK, the big strength of this team in the postseason and all season really was the back end of the bullpen and those the three-headed closer they had back there with Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis and Greg Holland. It's an expensive arrangement keeping those guys next year, and we know how bullpens can fluctuate. Do you think there's any truth to the scenario proposed of maybe moving one of those guys specifically? I mean, most likely Holland, I would think, if any of those guys were going to be moved, just because where he's at contractually. But do you think they're just going to keep those guys together, or maybe is that an area where the Royals could market one of them and help themselves elsewhere?
I think they're going to keep the three together. That's
that's
a pretty strong indication from the general manager. And as he points out, maybe ordinarily an ordinary payroll, pitching-wise, maybe they couldn't do it, but they do have Jordano Ventura and Danny Duffy in the rotation now.
Yeah.
And those are low service time guys. Relatively low payroll guys at this particular point. So that gives them a little more payroll flexibility to use in the bullpen. So I think they're going to make every effort to keep those three together. I mean, those three guys were absolute dynamite all season long. And, Holland did have a little arm issue late in the season, but he seems to be fine and throwing great at the end, so I don't foresee them breaking up that trio. Just from a fan's point of view, I don't think the fans want those guys to leave either, because they were certainly a great attribute and a great attraction for the fans to look for in the late innings of the games.
Well, I know some opponents, and particularly AL Central opponents, would probably like to see them break it up, but. But yeah, that's certainly a great area of strength to have, and maybe we'll even support those guys in the middle innings. Obviously, Jason Frazier is a guy they picked up midseason who hits free agency. So, maybe that's something they work to solve. But another thing, DK, that, and I know the answer to this because they're both Scott Boras clients, but Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer obviously really stepped up on the postseason stage. Neither guy has quite hit his potential in the regular season just yet. But you think about them long-term. Now, they're both under contract for another three seasons, I believe. But, this would be the point for a lot of clubs where you try to lock those guys up for the long-term. But, again, their agent has a history of getting guys to free agency, so I'm guessing that's not a front-burner topic at the moment.
No, but I think those guys are set, at least for the immediate future. A lot of people say, well, Moustakas had an off year, but he certainly picked up in the postseason, and Dayton Moore is on record as saying that Moustakas is the third baseman for the future. So I don't think either one of those guys are going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, and that's a big point of upside for this team. The experience those guys got in the September stretch and then the October run, the confidence they must have gained from that is probably off the charts. So there's this is not a dynamic offensive club from a power standpoint by any stretch of the imagination, but there's still a lot of upside with those two guys on the corners, and we'll see how they address the holes at DH and in right field and in the rotation where James Shields' innings loom large. So we'll see how it all shakes out. I want to thank Dick Cagle for joining us, joined by Jordan Bastian, talking about the Tribe as we head into the hot stove season that is always interesting. At least from a rumor and innuendo perspective, we'll see if there's any actual action. But the Indians had some action of their own early in the winter, just announcing the extension of one of their most important pieces, which is Terry Francona, who will be around through at least 2018, if not 2020. 2020, that's crazy to think. JB, that's as impactful as anything these guys are going to do this winter, I'd imagine, for the long term.
Yeah, I think so, and I think what it does, you know, maybe not necessarily this winter when you're talking about big-ticket free agents, because I don't think the Indians are going to be big players in that regard this winter. But if you think down the road, you know, if an opportunity arises again where, you know, if there's a situation a couple winters ago where they got Michael Bourne, they got Nick Swisher, you know, they did spend for some, you know, big-ticket free agent guys. Now you have a manager that's entrenched, who's a very, you know, has a great reputation among players around baseball, you know, for the environment he creates. He's got that the steady success of putting a winning, you know, leading a winning team on the field, I think 10 seasons in a row. The winning record, you know, so I think it provides that stability that is going to let people know that, you know, Cleveland's in a situation now where, you know, it's trying to create sustained success, and that begins from the top down, and, you know, they have their, you know, very highly regarded manager in place for years to come, and I think that says a lot, and I think it will say a lot maybe for some free agents who might otherwise not consider Cleveland.
Well, a lot of stability here. Nick Swisher, Michael Bourne, Jason Kipnis, Jan Gomes, Michael Brantley, all those guys are signed through at least 2017. And then the rotation, this young, controllable rotation, Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, Trevor Bauer, Danny Salazar, TJ House, all those guys are under really team-friendly situations. So now you can argue, in the case of Swisher, for instance, you know, maybe that's not a great thing to have that stability, but at least know he's there. But, you know, this team was middle of the pack offensively in just about every major category. Some of that was obviously impacted by injuries, to Swisher in particular. You know, I know there's among the fan base, there's certainly a ravenous hope that they can add some sort of, you know, middle of the order impact type of bat. I don't think that's especially realistic, both, you know, for what's available in the market and for kind of where they're at roster-wise. But it seems like, if anything, they'll supplant that and support that rotation and a bullpen that's also been very good. It seems like they're leaning more towards that side of things, given that that's where the depth of the market is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, what fans don't want to hear, but what is the reality of the situation, is if you just look at the contracts that are in place, there's just not a lot of wiggle room with that starting the starting lineup. And so if they are going to provide that impact bat or the middle of the order bat, you know, you're going to have to move some pieces first. I mean, you've got maybe a tradable player in Lonnie Chisenhall at third base, and you could say third base would definitely be an area you could upgrade. On the free agent market, it's pretty thin behind Pablo Sandoval. You could also look at right field, where you might have a platoon of Ryan Rayburn and David Murphy, who both are under contract for next year. You know, so you could look at that as an area that's upgradable, and everyone says, well, Nelson Cruz, he's out there, and things like that. But, okay, but you already have guys under contract who are in place. So if they are going to acquire an impact bat, you're going to need some trades to clear up a couple spots on the roster, just because there's so many players who they have committed to through next season, you know, and they are counting on the bounce backs from guys like Swisher, who, you know, Swisher was a pretty steady performer throughout his career until he signed that deal with Cleveland. It seems to be the case sometimes when the Indians hand out those big contracts. They've been burned by some of those. So, you know, I think they're counting on bounce backs from guys like him, and then they're also counting on the continued development and emergence of, you know, a pretty solid core, guys like Brantley and Gomes, and, you know, Kipnis coming off a down year. You hope he can bounce back from a, you know, his injury-marred season last year as well. And, you know, Carlos Santana, what he was able to do over the last 4 months, you know, and he's under contract again. So there is some hope that more power will come from within. And again, I just think if they're going to add to that lineup, it's probably going to have to be either through trades, or you're going to have to clear up not just salary, but you're just going to have to clear up space on the roster through trades.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Chisenhall as a trade candidate, and that's certainly interesting. I know they got Giovanni Urshela as a kid they like. I remember hearing about him when he was 17 years old and in Arizona Fall League. Johnny Gorel, the great longtime baseball man in the Indian system, was telling me about him way back when, and now here we are all these years later. He had a nice season at AAA, so maybe that's and a really solid glove. So Maybe they do take advantage of that that weak third base market beyond the Panda and market Chisholm. Do you think there's any scenario where they would market any of those young starters if they're able to find an affordable innings-eating veteran type and move a Bauer or Salazar? You think that's even remotely on the table?
I think so. I mean, I think, and I also think they're sort of, we've seen over the last few years, their middle infield and outfield prospects have kind of been stacking up in the in the upper levels of the minor leagues over the last few years. And, I think you could look at guys like Tyler Naquin in the outfield being floated in trade talks. You know, every team's going to ask on Francisco Lindor. Well, maybe the Indians try, and as much as they're touting Jose Ramirez as their starting shortstop, maybe they can try and sell high on him. He's 21 years old, proved down the stretch that he could be a contributor. Maybe you try and get a team to go after him. You know, maybe with the rotation, you know, Salazar hasn't really lived up to expectations, but we all see the upside. You know, that's a guy that teams could maybe try and ask for in a blockbuster-type scenario, especially if the Indians feel that they can spend a little bit on the free agent market or through trades to get some more veteran experience to put in the middle of that rotation. Because as strong as that rotation was down the stretch, there's still so many questions. I mean, Kluber, awesome year. It's the first year he's really had like that. Carlos Carrasco had an awesome final 2 months. I mean, that's 2 months. You know, Trevor Bauer had his ups and downs. Salazar hasn't really put together. House was solid. But these are all guys that come with unknowns and question marks. And, you know, so I think there's definitely the ability to float some of those guys in trade talks, and also still that need to add to that rotation, because beyond the five, I mean, you're looking at McAllister and Tomlin, and pretty thin after that. So, you know, I think those are definitely some options via the trade market.
Yeah, it was a tremendously exciting second half for that rotation to see that come together, and the what if game, if that team had reached October, if it would have any chance of advancing behind that rotation. But at the same time, yeah, like you said, you can't write any of that in cement. You can't take any of that as a given. I would say Kluber, you know, certainly has established himself at this point. It's two really strong seasons now. But other than that, yeah, it's a very short sample from those other guys. And you like the overall composition of that rotation. You just don't know, is that going to be a sure thing going forward? So I totally understand their outlook, especially, and the market's fairly deep. And part of that's a function of just where we're at offensively in Major League Baseball right now. But the market is fairly deep of viable starting pitching options. And
there's a good mid-tier selection, whether you're talking about guys like Brandon McCarthy or guys who are similar to that mold. You know, I think those are guys that the Indians can kind of target for the 3, 4, 5 type spots in that rotation. And, you know, it's not that doesn't mean they don't believe TJ House can cut it at the major league level. It's just, you got to kind of hedge your bets here and realize that you're going to go through 8 to 10 starting pitchers in any given season. And right now they're about 6 deep. So I think that's definitely something that they need to consider, you know, strengthening.
Yeah, you gotta hedge your bets, and you gotta get yourself some depth. And speaking of a guy who could be depth one way or another, starting or relieving, our old buddy Justin Masterson. Do you think there's any chance of reunion in the offing there? I know he's certainly a buy low candidate after everything that transpired this past year.
Yeah, I mean it didn't seem like the sides were. You would just hope there wouldn't be any bitterness between the agency and the organization, the way the talks broke apart and things like that. But, I mean, there's such a strong history there. Francona obviously has his great history with Masterson. And, I think if there's a one-year deal to be had there, I don't see why you wouldn't try to at least pursue it, especially with his every other season track record here. It would seem like he'd be primed for a big year. But, I mean, I would not doubt that they would at least approach him and say, hey, you know, we're interested in a one-year deal, bring you back, we'll see what happens, maybe throw some incentives in there, maybe talk about using it as a kind of a platform to what he had hoped to do in free agency this offseason, you know, maybe looking ahead to next year. So, you know, I don't see why you wouldn't. I mean, again, there's that reputation and that history, and also, you know, he's had success in Cleveland, and yeah, I think the familiarity is definitely interesting. But you got to believe that there's going to be other teams, too, that are going to be trying to take advantage of a down year for him and trying to pull him into the fold.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, the best, probably the best free agent pitching signing last year was Phil Hughes, who not quite to that level of just a mess of a season the year before, but certainly was a guy who was looking to reestablish his value and did that with the Twins in a tremendous way, so with a two-year contract. But I think people are going to point to those kind of instances and say, I think there's just a gravitation towards that middle tier in general, because Team C, I mean, there's a long list of those long-term upper market contracts just simply don't pan out. So certainly smarter to try to find the value, and that's something these Indians definitely need to do. Any other thoughts here as we enter the offseason? Anything else you think overall, do you think it's going to be probably a quiet winter for this club, or might they have some surprises up their sleeve?
You know, I mean, I always go back to when the Indians traded for Ubaldo and got rid of Drew Pomeranz and Alex White. And granted, we were all kind of still learning Chris Antonetti as a general manager at that point, because he was still recently into taking over for Shapiro. But those were two pitching prospects that I didn't think the Indians would ever trade. And they did. And so I think you can't count Antonetti out, especially when it comes to trade talks. You look at a couple years ago, the Shin-Soo Chu deal, 9 players, 3 teams. They ended up getting Trevor Bauer. They got Brian Shaw, who look what he's evolved into in that bullpen, and things like that. Drew Stubbs filled a need for 1 year. He has this history of these trades that really come out of nowhere seemingly and surprise you, and I think I just have learned to no longer be surprised if he has one or two of those up his sleeve. So while he's been pretty clear in kind of shooting down the idea that they're going to go after some big-ticket free agents, that's probably just not realistic, I think the trade market is definitely going to be something the Indians are looking at, and I wouldn't be surprised if a player is moved or a player is acquired that we just didn't even see happening, or we thought this guy was untouchable. You know, even Francisco Lindor, as much as he's being highly touted, you know, we mentioned Jose Ramirez. You know, maybe they can float, try and sell high on Ramirez, or maybe Lindor is not as untouchable as we thought. So I think those are things that I'm trying to think about now, in terms of what Antonetti has shown in the past, given his history with some surprising trades at the deadline and also in the offseason.
You're absolutely right. And there's a lot of creativity in the game right now, because and we see it. I mean, the competitive parity is at a point where no team is completely out of it. I mean, the gap between being an also-ran and suddenly being a frisky contender is probably as small as it's been in a long time. So certainly lends itself to a lot of creativity on that trade front. So we'll see if anything's developed there. We'll see if any trades develop in our Wahoo Fantasy Football League that Jordan and I are involved in. Joined by Scott Merkin, talking about a White Sox team that's got some work to do this offseason and probably has a little financial wiggle room to do it, which is a good thing. Merk, we talked about this, you know, as the second half evolved, and now the point to me is hammered home all the more when we see what happened to the Tigers in the playoffs and just kind of look at their payroll structure. And the Royals made that deep run to the World Series, and there's always wear and tear that comes with that, especially for a team that's so reliant on those back-end bullpen arms. But the point I'm getting to is that there could be a window of opportunity here for teams like the White Sox and the Indians, who are more of the middle of the road in the Central last season. For the White Sox to bridge that gap, what needs to happen here?
Well, I think the first thing they have to do is, you know, while you're right on all your points, and, you know, Detroit and Kansas City and everything else in that division, is just kind of focus on themselves and, you know, not really worry. I mean, keep the other teams, like you said, in perspective and know that, you know, there's not a dominant team that's going to win 102, 103 games and you're basically playing for the wild card. But, you know, just kind of focus on what you need to improve. And I think, obviously, the first area, and you pointed up with the Royals in the postseason, and you can look at Baltimore, too, is bullpen. You know, you got to have that, not necessarily lockdown bullpen, but you need to have the pieces to kind of shorten the game from time to time. And the thing is, you know, I think Sox fans are looking at a closer. I just don't see, that's just not the Sox MO. I don't see them going out and, you know, going 4 years, $48 million for a pure ninth inning guy. Rick Hahn's talked at the end of the season, as a matter of fact, and before that, about how, yeah, it'd be great to have a regular closer. They had one in Addison Reed, who they, you know, they traded away. They had one in Bobby Jenks. But he's not, you know, set on only having one and that's it as a closer. It's good to have some flexibility. So I would see the Sox, and these are just names to throw out there, but going after a guy like, you know, more like a guy like Gregor, Luke Gregerson or Zach Duke or Pat Neshek. Again, just ideas that would fit. Guys who certainly could pitch the ninth without a problem, but also can pitch. And a lot of times it's just as important, if not more important, that sixth, seventh, and eighth inning, which you saw with Herrera and you saw with Wade Davis leading up to Greg Holland with Kansas City as an example. You got some young guys there, too, you know, with the Sox that pitched pretty well last year, Patricia and Putnam and Webb. Chris Bassett looked good in the AFL before he was shut down. So there's some options. But bullpen is number one. And you probably need a left-handed bat. You need some sort of bat, preferably left-handed, to kind of protect Abreu and Avi Garcia, or just kind of fit in the middle with them there. So I would think those are the two categories. And then you'd like probably one more starting pitcher. Right now you have Sale, Quintana, Danks, and then maybe Noesi is number five. You know, Carlos Rodon is right there. You know, he may not be breaking camp with the team, but I would guess it's going to be really shortly thereafter that he's going to be, you know, taking his turn every 5 days for the White Sox. So you're probably looking for a right-handed starter, and not necessarily Max Scherzer or someone who's going to command top dollar, but someone who kind of fits, you know, the ballpark and fits the rotation. I think that's the thing to describe with the Sox is best fit. You know, it's not about cutting dollars, but it's not all about the dollars. Your last year, they were more than willing, after they had kind of come close to budget, to go after Tanaka from Japan, and you know they bid, I think, you know, around $100 million over 5 years, because they felt he fit, because they felt it was something that fit the profile of the team. So it's, you know, it's, that's the biggest thing, is the guys have to fit in what the White Sox are doing.
Well, they can make some things fit. You know, Paul Konerko's retirement, Matt Lindstrom, and Adam Dunn removing those salaries from the picture. I believe they have around $45-46 million in commitments for next season before they get into, I think they have six arbitration cases. Is that right, Mark?
Six, yeah. So, you know, so it's going to probably be somewhere around, you know, if the budget, let's just go by the fact that the budget was not around $90 million last year, and let's say it's somewhere within that range, maybe a little higher or a little lower, you're still looking probably, you know, $30 million that you can spend during this. If you go to the budget limit in the off season, you have about $30 million to spend then.
Yeah, I remember on a previous podcast, Merck, I gave you about $30 million to spend. I think you spent about $55.
I did, and then, yeah.
You went a little crazy. It was like when Eagles tickets go on sale, and you just kind of lose your mind for a minute. But as far as that bat, you mentioned the bat. Victor Martinez is a guy who they'll be linked to and have been linked to. He's a switch hitter, obviously. Going to be crazy expensive for a guy in his mid-30s.
Right.
There's actually a pretty deep, you know, class of guys in that sort of DH role if the White Sox do decide to go that route. Kendry Morales, another switch hitter who's 31 years old and, you know, has shown power in the past. Maybe he's more of a buy-low candidate. Any other names come to mind for you?
Well, see, here's the thing. I think one of the X factors on this team is because they really still, after, you know, after a number of years, don't know what they have completely in him is Vicieto. I would imagine unless they trade him, they're going to tender him a contract. And I don't think they prefer to have him as their – I know they don't want him as their – you know, he's worked hard and tried to make himself a respectable left fielder, but there are better outfielders than Dion Vecchio, obviously. So, you know, you could go after a DH, and they want a guy who's not just going to be a pure DH. They want a guy like, you know, Victor, who can go to first base a little bit. He probably could catch a game or two if you had to have him do that. But as an example, you know, so you could look at a guy like Kobe Rasmus, who could play – yeah, I know he's played center almost his entire career, but, you know, that's he had a meeting spot. So if he went to the Sox, it would be more of a corner outfield, left or right. And then he used Vicieto more as DH. So, you know, they're looking for something along those lines, I think. Even a guy like, and I know there's going to be a huge market for him too, Nelson Cruz, who's a right-handed hitter, would be a great fit in that ballpark. And he could play left field, and you could have Vicieto DH, and you can kind of, you know, rotate the guys in and out. So, again, I think they're looking lefty first. Martinez is an interesting case because we talked to Aviciel Garcia at the end of the year, and he had said that Victor had told him he really likes Chicago. You know, he likes the organization. He likes the city. He's good friends with Garcia, and he knows Garcia would be a good fit there. But, boy, I don't know about you, Anthony, but I find it hard to believe Detroit's just going to, you know, I think Detroit's going to really battle, for lack of a better word, anyone who's interested in him to keep him in as part of that roster.
Yeah, I don't see Victor moving on from Detroit ultimately. I've seen the White Sox I mean, this happens all the time this time of year. Just about every team is linked to just about just every player. But I saw the name Pablo Sandoval thrown around, just him being such a hot commodity coming off the World Series. Obviously, they're You know, Connor Gillespie had a really nice season for them at third base. They got Matt Davidson in the system. But there's one of the bigger name bats available ultimately. I don't know. You don't see that happening, do you, Merck?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there would be some interest there just because of who he is and what he brings to the table. You know, switch hitter, very solid defensive third baseman. The thing is, I've heard this talk, you know, it'd be true, and he seems to be a good athlete whatever size he's at. You know, I know he's kind of fluctuated over the years, but people, you know, the talk you seem to hear going into the offseason is that eventually this is a guy who may end up over on the other side of the diamond, or is it DH? Well, they're pretty well set on the other side of the diamond in Abreu. So I think it comes down to, you know, they're not a team that a lot of times will set the market, but they will get in there and be competitive as soon as it gets going, you know. So I think that could be a case where if they sense some serious interest and sense that it'll fit, they may go after him, but I don't think he's a priority for them. And nothing against Sandoval, I just think they have other areas they want to go to before they explore third base. And, you know, again, I don't know if Connor Gillespie or Matt Davidson are the answers. They have another third baseman in the system who's a little ways away. He's a draft pick, Trey Miyashevsky. I got that name pronounced right, actually. And, you know, so they have some options there. But obviously Sandoval would be a, you know, a gold standard, a guy who's won some World Series and played great in the postseason, good clubhouse guy. So, yeah, it's an interesting name, but, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of people interested in Sandoval. So that's just a question of how high and how many years you want to go for him. And, again, you go back to, are the Giants actually going to let him go, which I find that hard to believe, too.
Yeah. Well, here's another another thing that I'm intrigued by with the White Sox that I don't expect to happen, but you never know. Alexi Ramirez at short. They need him. They've got kind of this glut of second basemen. I don't know if they feel comfortable moving any of those guys to short. Mike, talk about Micah Johnson, Marcus Semien, Carlos Sanchez. At shortstop, they're not nearly as well stocked, but, man, Alexi would be extremely valuable as a trade chip right now, especially when you think about a certain New York team that's looking for a shortstop. A lot of people are looking for productive shortstops. They're in very short supply. But the White Sox need him as well, entering his last year before free agency. So do you suspect any real movement or any real activity on that front?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I wrote this earlier in the offseason, and I think he's a benefit to them in multiple ways, because if you keep him, you got a guy who's a leader, who's been there since 08. You know, he knows the clubhouse. He's a good leader among the Hispanic players in there. And, you know, he just fits over. He's a great player. He's a really solid shortstop. You know, I don't know if he's going to hit MVP status, but this is a guy who you know what you're going to get almost every year from. You know, 280 to 300, 15 to 20, you know, maybe a little bit lower in the home runs, but the stolen bases have gone up, 25, 30 stolen bases, 60 to 80 RBIs, and solid defense. You know, he was a finalist in the Gold Glove at short. But as you just mentioned, he's also probably their number one, unless they explore trading Quintana, which I don't see happening. He's probably their number one trade commodity. So, you know, I think what you do there is you probably set the price extraordinarily high, and if someone comes in and can meet that, then you either, you know, you move him and get what you can and go look for another shortstop, or you go for a year, you know, and try and figure out what you can do for this season. You know, another guy that's been mentioned is Tyler Saladino had a good season in the minors for Charlotte, and he had his season was ended a little early by Tommy John surgery, but they're expecting him to be healthy at the start of spring training 15, so I could see him being in the mix. As of right now, I would think Alexi Ramirez, come opening day in early April, will be the White Sox shortstop. But again, you make a good point, especially because he can also play second base. He's played second base very well early on in his career for the White Sox, so yeah. He gives you that kind of flexibility. And, you know, he's their number one trade chip, so like I said, he benefits them on the field. He benefits them in kind of the open market as well.
We mentioned the glut at second base. They have a similar glut from the left-handed starting standpoint once Carlos Rodon joins the mix. But you've said this, I think we've said this on this podcast even, that John Danks is probably not going anywhere with all that money remaining on his contract.
Yeah, you know, I think John Danks sometimes gets a bad rap because you hear people mention he's a trade candidate, but oh, no one's going to take that salary. Well, I mean, you know, he is, I think it's $28 million over the next 2 years. But I think he's kind of learning himself as a pitcher a little, you know, the more and more he gets removed from that surgery he had a couple of years ago, the season-ending arthroscopic, you know, shoulder surgery. He's basically had almost two full seasons now behind that surgery. And, you know, he was never Randy Johnson. He was never 99, you know, 97 consistently, but he was, you know, 91, 93. And he's now more, you know, the comparison pitching coach Don Cooper's made is he's more like Mark Burley. He's, you know, more about location and using the changeup and, you know, throwing strikes and just, you know, keeping hitters off balance while throwing, you know, maybe 88, 89, maybe 90 if he, you know, gets on a roll there. And I think, you know, you saw him in the second half of the season. He's a tireless worker. He makes a lot of adjustments. And he's another one who's, you know, I think he's the most, with Konerko gone, he's the most seasoned veteran on that team now. And can be a key. The Sox are not just going to give him away, and I don't see them throwing in, you know, a lot of money if they did trade him. So I think they value what they have in him, and he's, you know, a good influence on that rotation with Sale and Quintana. And, you know, they have no problem with having five lefties, let alone four when Rodon comes up. They just want good pitchers. So, yeah, I don't expect John Danks to be traded. I don't even see, you know, a contract for a contract type of thing. I think, you know, unless it's a deal they really want, John Danks is going to be part of their rotation.
All right, so right-handed starter, left-handed bat, new-look bullpen, and then just start printing those AL Central Championship t-shirts, right?
To go that, I got to bring it down to about 30, 32 million. I'm still probably around 40 right now. But
we're big spender, Merck. You know, we don't have your wad of cash laying around. We gotta be a little more frugal for the White Sox. So,
I want to thank Scott Merkin
for joining us. Joined by Rhett Bollinger, we're going to talk about the hot stove season as we enter into the free agency and the trade market and the rumor mill and all that fun stuff. And the Twins figure to be right in the middle of all of that because they're a team that certainly wants to rise out of the rut of the last 4 years, four straight 90-plus loss seasons. Made a change at the top with Ron Gardenhire out and Paul Molitor in. And let's ask Rhett about that first of all. I mean, Molitor's obviously a guy who means so much to this organization's history and also its present. I mean, he was on Gardenhire's coaching staff this past year. I'm sure he's a guy who has the respect of the players, you know, the second he walks in the room. What was your reaction to that, how that process played out and also, you know, to Molitor's readiness for this position?
Well, Molitor was always the front runner, so it wasn't a surprise that he got the job from the start. I mean, he's a guy that's been in the organization for 18 years, various roles. He finished his Hall of Fame playing career here in Minnesota, served as a bench coach for this team, was a roving minor league instructor and spring training instructor for 10 years, was, you know, on the major league staff last year under Gardenhire. So basically it's kind of a, you know, perfect world where he knows all the guys on the major league roster right now from being on the, you know, the roster last year, but he also knows all the minor leaguers from all his time as kind of a roving instructor. So he's very familiar with the organization. Like you said, he commands so much respect as a Hall of Famer. He's a little more serious in demeanor than Gardenhire. Definitely very different personalities. I mean, Gardenhire is more of the kind of chummy, funny, laid-back type guy, where Molitor's also a little laid-back, but just a little more quiet and just a different feel around the two of them. So anyone who kind of thinks the Twins are hiring kind of a clone or something or not really making much of a difference and a change, they're wrong. I mean, he's definitely more into the advanced stats, into shifting, that kind of thing. So I definitely think Molitor was a strong hire and one that was kind of expected from the start, but the process took a while. Twins did their due diligence, didn't want to make any announcements during the World Series, but in the end they got their man and made their big announcement on Tuesday.
Something I never knew about Molitor was the role he had in scouting the A's in 2002 and when the Twins took down that Moneyball A's team. A lot of players credited him for the advanced scouting that he had done. Showed a little savvy there.
Yeah, I didn't know about that until yesterday. I mean, yesterday, Terry Ryan was talking to us and was telling us the same story. And he said that he remembered even seeing those reports and that they were, you know, even better than most of the kind of advanced scouts that they had hired that had been doing it for a long time. So he sees things that most people don't see.
Well, he's going to need to – maybe he'll see some things in the pitching market for a Twins team that needs, you know, once again, needs some assistance in that area. Obviously, the worst ERA from a starting standpoint for the third time in 4 years. And that was with a really strong strong input from Phil Hughes, who was a great buy-low pickup for the Twins. And they're going to need him to repeat that. And they're going to need to find another Phil Hughes out there somewhere. As you look at the market, Rhett, maybe the Twins are in a good spot from the standpoint that, you know, pitching's never been deeper, really, just as a function of the offensive decline around Major League Baseball. But there's some guys at the top of the heap, obviously, like the Max Scherzers and John Lesters of the world. Don't expect the Twins to play in that market. But, you know, you look at the depth of options in free agency, and maybe they'll find another diamond in the rough.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go after one of those big guys like you mentioned. I don't think they're going to go after a Scherzer or a Shields or a Lester. It certainly would be a big help for this rotation. I mean, to have a kind of an ace at the top of it to join Hughes. But I just think with the years and the money involved, the Twins usually don't, you know, get involved into that outside of their, you know, big one last year getting Alaska and, you know, $49 million. And sure enough, he really struggled last year. So
right.
I think they'll probably go after more of a mid-tier rotation guy, maybe a guy like a Jason Hamill or a Brandon McCarthy. I think they're going to stay away from guys, though, that were offered qualifying offers, whether it's a position player or a pitcher. I don't think they want to lose a draft pick with, you know, right now with the way they're kind of still retooling their team. But definitely, I think they're definitely going to sign a starting pitcher. I think it's probably going to be from that second tier rather than, you know, kind of breaking the bank and going after one of those aces.
I mean, McCarthy's a great option, in my opinion. Doesn't walk anybody, strikes people out. You know, really figured some things out when he kind of changed his arsenal heading over to the Yankees this past season. But and you got some guys who can just eat up innings for you. Twins go that right. A guy like Kyle Kendrick or Ryan Vogelsong. I mean, those guys are going to give you, you know, maybe 180 innings or so, which could be an asset to just kind of stabilizing things. That's what the Twins need right now. They had a nice year offensively. Any trade candidates on this club, Red? I mean, I Trevor Plouffe is a guy I'm sure some people will point to just coming off of a nice season at third base if the Twins want to make room for Miguel Sano, but that might be rushing things a bit, certainly on a Sano standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, Plouffe definitely could be an option he moved, I mean, with Sano coming up, but I guess the problem with it is that Sano coming off of Tommy John, I guess there's still not 100% certainty that Sano is going to be a third baseman. So it'd be tough to trade away a guy like Plouffe who kind of had his big breakout year and prove that he can at least be a solid, you know, above average third baseman in the big leagues, to lose a guy like that and then bring in Sano and maybe he can't play third. I mean, I think the Twins are very hopeful that he can. I just don't think the Plouffe thing will happen probably in this offseason. It could happen maybe in the future. But Plouffe definitely did a lot last year and probably has his value is probably about as high as it's ever been. They could obviously go after a trade to some prospects and guys. Eddie Rosario is a guy that kind of had some trouble in the minors, but had a really big Arizona Fall League. There's some of those guys like that. I can't imagine they're going to make, even Oswaldo Arcia, the other young guy, that maybe they could do that, but I think he's too much of a part of their future with the power. I think anything, I don't expect any major trades with this club. Maybe some smaller ones, and maybe, you know, because they're just trying to go after one of those, you know, mid-tier starters, or even going after some starting pitchers that are kind of like a Brett Anderson type or one of those kind of reclamation projects where you kind of get a guy and see if you can get him for cheaper, and maybe you get lucky the way they kind of did with Hughes. So I think that any big major trades that can shake up this roster probably would surprise me, but I guess you never know.
Yeah, Brandon Morrow strikes me as an option there when you mentioned a sort of reclamation-type project. He could be an interesting one. Or Justin Masterson, a guy who used to be in the division for the Indians, definitely on the reclamation end. But, I mean, the general expectation, they have some young guys infiltrating the rotation at this point. They made the trade midseason, Sam Fold, for Tommy Malone, and maybe Malone ultimately shakes out for him. They're just trying to piece things together rotation-wise. As far as the position player standpoint is concerned, do you expect any movement there? You think they're fairly satisfied around the diamond, or are there areas to maybe improve there?
I think they could maybe add maybe one outfielder. I mean, they have some options in the outfield. Obviously, Arcia is kind of the right fielder of the future. But he kind of goes through these slumps here and there, and still his defense still hasn't got quite to the point they want it to get to. Aaron Hicks, obviously, as we know, has had some struggles the last 2 years as a center fielder. Jordan Schaefer was a nice pickup, but he kind of seems more as a fourth outfield option. So I could see them going after maybe another outfielder, maybe even a veteran guy. I know that maybe even a someone that's had some history with the team. I thought Kadir might have been a good fit before he was offered the qualifying offer. That's not going to happen, but they've been linked already to talking to Torrey Hunter's agents. So they could go after a veteran guy because that's such a young clubhouse, maybe to kind of get these guys, you know, kind of show them the ropes, I guess you could say. But I could also see them just going after a kind of a, you know, lower, cheaper option, a guy who can play all three positions to kind of at least give him some more depth in the outfield for now. Because with Buxton suffering another injury with his, you know, broken middle finger, he's going to be out till February when he comes back. His timeline keeps getting pushed back and back and further. So I think that right now the Twins, at least in the short term, might go after an outfield option. But I got to imagine, you know, infield and catching, unless it's some sort of, you know, kind of non-roster, really cheap minor league moves. I don't really see anything too major. It's going to be more in the outfield, I think.
Yeah, it's fun to envision a guy like Kadire or Hunter coming back. But yeah, as you mentioned, Kadire, that pretty much killed that when he got the qualifying offer, which as we record this, I mean, who knows, by the time people listen to this, he could have accepted that, just given the way that could hurt his market. And then Hunter, yeah, incredible clubhouse presence, and the Twins know that as well as anybody, but certainly getting up there in years, so you wonder at what point you're overpaying for his contributions on the field. You know, there are guys, I don't know, Chris DeNorfio just came to mind. We talk about a guy who can kind of play all over and be more of a complimentary piece. There's a guy who's available, but we'll see. The main thing for the Twins is, yeah, finding another starter who can just give them quality innings. That's what they need right now more than anything. And certainly have a good guy in the dugout in Paul Molitor, a guy who's respected and savvy and going to bring a lot of things to that job. But at the end of the day, if they don't improve their pitching, it's going to be tough to climb out of that position in the AL Central. So we'll see. Thanks for Rhett Ballinger for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.